Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are warned that the following podcast program may contain stories, names and voices of deceased persons.
This is Outback Out Loud.
People and stories from Outback New South Wales.
The stars. We have all the stars.
They're not really simple things. They're just pretty amazing.
I reckon it's the most enticing culture that you could ever learn.
Having a yarn. Good to have a yarn. And I like talking, so.
This is Outback Out Loud, Burke.
Check out these stories from our community.
Outback Out Loud!
That's what I like.
To me, it's the people. Yeah.
People are friendly, yeah.
You know, you've got to make your own fun and enjoy yourself, that's it.
There's heaps to do if you get involved. Yeah, it's a great place to live.
Go fishing, swimming.
Life's easy in Burke is probably the best way to say it.
I especially like the sunset.
Burke kind of is the epitome of all of the country vibes, you know?
There was more to this than just a small town.
It's just a very strong community.
Like the saying goes, you ain't been anywhere at all until you've been to Burke.
Gavin Gibbs. We're at the Burke Bowling Club. This is my second job. My family's from Wilmeringal and Gadooga. Ended up being born in Brewarrina because of there wasn't a doctor at that time. So ended up being here through the shearing industry. My grandfather moved here. Bigger town, more opportunities, and then we just followed suit. Yeah, so I came here in 1992 after finishing school, because this is where the Orchards were living, and sort of to get to know my mother's family. And I went to school in Queanbeyan, and then there was a little stint in Newcastle. So, you know, sent away, get your education sort of thing, and come back. I just remember being a culture shock, obviously, come from Brewarrina, about 80% Aboriginal, going there where there was hardly any Aboriginal people. Me being that, probably about two in the whole school of about 400. But looking back now, it's got me a respect for other cultures and how to get along, and just as humans. To come back here and see that, just to compare, I think, then that became a culture shock for me, because Aboriginal people hung with the Aboriginal people, non-Aboriginal, and there was not many in between. I saw division here that I didn't know how to handle. So, and that went so deep into other issues in Burke, I felt. I followed into alcohol abuse and other stuff, and then there was violence, and then, you know, because I wanted to go to university, but we ended up in a shearing shed because that's what all the family did, you know. So on so many levels, that's what you follow. And that was the 90s. I believe there's a lot of healing going on in Burke, and we're back to what I do remember, when everyone did get along. Yeah. But I think employment was the turnaround for me again. That was the saviour. This is my second job. What community needs, that's what sort of ready does, you know. I'm the site manager there. A part of it is a employment service contract. We've got about 350 on the caseload, about 140 anchored jobs at the moment, which is, and that's both Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal. About 80% of our caseload is Aboriginal. I jumped on board being able to try and change what's going on, I believe, for the last 25 years is our people and the outlook on employment. So to be able to provide my story, they know me personally, to talk about the change in my life to how, what employment has done for it. So it's people's just perception of employment. That's how deep it is here. 25 years of unemployment, it leads to other issues, obviously. There's not that many jobs, or there hasn't been in over time. In saying that, at the moment, Burke's never been in a better place. We've got water, it's green. You know, after COVID, a blessing in disguise, people stayed home and put money into the town, and now Shire Council have, you know, change in attitudes, I believe, there. So there's infrastructure and lots of stuff going on in the town that we tap into for employment. So it's personal care. So having walked the story or know the story of the person who's at risk or needing any service, I just believe that you need to have known that system to provide. So I'm pretty proud in the way I tell our story and lead my team is personal care. Just to come back to the humble nature. Yeah, absolutely. And this is where, that's what's happened in those 25 odd years or whatever, 30 years. You go away and then sometimes you just need to go home, and that's what's happened this time. That's why I'm here this time. Is came back in July, COVID, all that sort of stuff. You just wanted to come back. Everything was shut down all over the place, but we could just drive out to Woomeringa where all the family was meeting and sit around a campfire and, you know, just untouched. Just that's the best part.
Yes, there was dancers and everything like that, and even clay pan dancers.
What's a clay pan dance?
Out in the scrub out there on the open, you know.
I don't know, so you have to tell me.
You've got to tell us.
With a music box and that, and just switch it on and get up and dance with all the mob that goes out and has a drink and everything like that, you know, clay pan dance.
We call that a bush doof.
Yeah, well, the bush took, yeah.
Big old 78.
What songs were rock and roll?
Yeah, what were you listening to?
Oh, gramophone. Yeah, I had all that old Slim Whitman and Slim Dusties and all them.
I keep hearing about Slim Dusty. His legacy lives on.
He's a millionaire.
He's a legacy.
Yeah.
He's a legend.
They still play him every hour on the hour.
Well, my name is Gertrude Dorigo, and everyone calls me Gertie. I go under Gertie. I was born in Bourke in 1948. We used to come and go from the bush. Well, wherever my parents was working in the bush. But then when we came to town, we lived down the other end. There's none of those places there no more. On the other side of the Billabong. We'd go to the St. Ignatius Church. Most Aboriginal people lived down that end of town, all down that way. There used to be a billabong before St. Ignatius. It runs through there, but that's all blocked off now, but went right through the town. There used to be a bridge there, old bridge. They called it the reserve. Well, now they call it the village, you know, just to make it sound a bit better. Yes, my auntie lived in block of land just in a big old tin shack, so we all lived together like two families. My cousins, we all lived together. The main thing, we just went fishing with our grandmother, yeah, mainly on the river. As we got a bit older, well, we sort of roamed around the streets and things. Sometimes it even where people threw their garden things out over the fence along the river, there might have been tomatoes growing. So we'd pick the tomatoes, you know. Yeah. We swim down here where the wharf is. They call that the old diving pool because it used to be the wharf. And if you see old pictures. But then we all called it the diving board because there was no swimming pool then. And that's where we all went to swim. We'd have Christmas out on the river down below the weir. So Mum was nearly always working. She worked out on properties or she was driving. Well, it was only Mum, Auntie Elsie, and Mary Sappy that I can remember. When Mum came back into town, she put us to school then, but she always thought about, you know, everything that she used to do. Yeah. Like if she seen, when she's travelling and seen the green grass, she'd always think of all the feed, you know, for the cattle. If she seen, you know, all the grass growing everywhere when she's travelling, She always wore a hat until she passed away, really, in the 70s. Always wore the hat. I've sort of travelled around, lived in a few places. I think the river kept calling you back home, you know.
Every Saturday at Diggers on the Darling, Possum and Bart turn up for a social breakfast. Newcomers and locals alike are welcome.
There's a group that meets every Saturday morning at about 9, and we're normally there for a couple of hours, so come on down anytime, introduce yourself. It's primarily for students through the Rural Exchange Program, like, you know.
Northwest Academic Centre, yeah.
And I said, but really, it's incumbent of, like, the solicitors that come that are new. It's almost like Dave,
the Ambos.
The Ambos, like Dave, who's working, came out from Cronulla. He came along, and now he's the people he lives with are actually
people he'd met at breakfast.
Because
he was renting a room from a lady, which was lovely, but he didn't know anybody much. And so we'd said to Bart, bring him along to breakfast. So, because I always feel sorry when you're new and you don't know too many, it's a good way of meeting up for social events and things. And Bart brought him along for breakfast. He just hit it off with everybody. And then was it probably only 2 or 3 weeks later, they said, oh, he's moving in with Liv and Bob. And we said, oh, really? So it was great.
And he went and did a 3-month stint in Dubbo. And it's so funny because he came back because he was down there doing the secondment. And then he came back. He goes, oh, I'm so glad to be home. He said, I was almost homesick. And go, Dave, you're from Cronulla.
Yeah, no, like, this isn't home, but it's, yeah, because it's, like, yeah.
He goes, oh, yeah. I'm so glad to be back. He goes, yeah. He goes, you know, I'd go to the pub in Dubbo and I'd walk up and I'd start talking to people and they'd just look at me like, who are you?
Yeah.
He says, well, you go to the pub here in Berg, and he said, you don't even need to go and talk to people. People go, g'day, mate, how you going? Yeah. What are you
and
doing?
It is. It's just, like, and it's funny because the student you've got at the moment at Corrective Services, she was only here a week, and admittedly she's lived in Burrell, so I guess it's a little bit country, but I dropped her home from breakfast on the Saturday the first week, and she said, oh, Possum, I could come and live in Berg. I said, Jackie, you've only been here a week. And she said, no, but the longer she's here, she's enjoying it more. Plus the two girls that have come out from Bondi, they're loving it. They're due to go home next week, and one of them's trying to say, oh, well, they're supposed to go Thursday lunchtime. And then they said this morning, oh, Georgie doesn't want to go until after Easter. And then, you know, but just how great. It's so much better than they ever expect, so which is great. It's
What's the old saying? Under promise and over deliver.
Yeah. But it is, and like we said, you can do as much as you like or as little as you want. I think Saturday breakfast is the best thing because you get to know one another, and it's just nice and relaxed, and they've all formed great friendships and do things together. Because I think it started off, it was just Liv and I used to come every Saturday after park run. It went from 2 people to, you know, 20-odd people, but which is nice. It's never too many.
But from that as well, not only that, because people will go to the park run and they'll have breakfast, but then you will often go off to Mount Oxley with a group, and then you'll go to Mount Gunnabooka. They'll go across to Lightning Ridge to the mud baths and stuff like that, and say they're going for a drive over to
Cobar. Yeah, and I think we, like I said, we take so much for granted because we live here.
No.
But we're very fortunate.
When you talk about the skies, I remember coming back to Berg and just going, wow, you really do forget how beautiful it is out here. And I even remember bringing a mate out when I was at uni and we were driving out. He said, oh, stop the car. I want to take some photos. And he was literally doing the whole, like, you know, the hop all the way in. And I go, mate, what are you doing? I go, there's nothing. He goes, yeah, that's it. He goes, but I've never seen this before.
But see, you lived away for so long that you, like you said, you missed the stars and things.
Yeah,
I've never done that.
The brightness and stuff, the clarity of the skies and just beautiful.
Yeah, simple things, as I say, that we take for granted out here. But they're not really simple things. They're just pretty amazing. So we do live in a great little spot, I think, don't we?
Yeah.
I'm Peter Simmons, live at Kidman's Camp, tourist park at Berg. You're born here. Mum was born here and her dad was born here. Between the park and the horses, that takes up our days now. Well, we started just a bit over 20 years ago. a lot of people say it's a little oasis, you know, it's lawns, gardens, trees. We've built log cabins. They're fairly unique, them fellas. So we're building two more at the moment. So we'll go and get cypress, it's not too far out. So we'll go and get cypress trees and we'll build that. We'll sort of build out of cypress. And then so I have a portable mill. And then we'll mill the red gum, you know, all the slabs for bench tops and the tables and bed heads and that sort of stuff. So they actually have sort of barked and varnished tree trunks in them, like uprights and cut into them, and the bed heads are out of trees and bits of slabs.
G'day.
So this cypress pine, all, like we mill everything, mill that, and it's never going to worry about chemicals or anything like that. When I was a young fella with the sport I done, I spent a couple of years in America, travelling hard. And then, because you see a lot of log cabins over there, a lot of homes, and then we spent one night, because you're on the road all the time, the fellas I was with knew we were in Texas, and they pulled in like midnight to this place, and this old fella that just liked cowboys, he had a cabin that was a proper log cabin built, and it was set up just for fellas on the road, but it had about five beds in it. But it had the old saddle and an old bed. You walked into an old cowboy's room from 1800. So his ropes were there, his bridle was there, his saddle was there, his old bearskin coat was there. It was just like he died and they'd left it. Yeah, so then I thought, oh, when I got home and we decided to do this. And on the first lot, we've actually got the stock saddles tech screwed up there. And then there's a bridle on a horseshoe hook over on the wall. And yeah, that's how the first lot was done. We saddle bronc riding rodeos. Yeah. And we've done it solid for years and done the pro scene over there in America. But to do the PRC over there and here, you just can't compare it. Oh, like it's good and there's some good riders come out of, a lot of good riders come out of Australia. But to go there, it's another level again and on the pro scene. You know, it's an unreal life. Yeah. That's how it would have started, you know, way back. There was someone had a horse that they couldn't break or couldn't ride, and there was someone. Yeah, so I think that's how it all started a long time ago. And their shows, they're like Pendleton. They've just kept it the same for 200 years. You know, they've just, even though it's modern, everything's modern, but they still run it the same, and they do stuff they done 100 odd years ago. Way of life over there. They're larrikins and they're wild, and you know, they live on the road, but they're just so patriotic and old-fashioned and so proud of it. Yeah, that was a good part of it.
We had a chat with Peter about the history of the floods in Bourke, before and after the levee bank was built.
No, I just say, you know, like I'm born in the 56 floods here, there's no levee bank. And Mum was telling me when I was little, well, the railway station up here, well, that was only the ice part in Bourke. It looked like it was going to flood. Brought the army in, and the only place they could bring the army in was at the airport. And they had to blow the railway line out here, where you're coming in from Dubbo, Sydney, like this way, and let the water go to Laufen, that way, you know. Like, saved Bourke for them, because they had no levee banks then. And there's another big flood here, but they had levee banks right around town. Bourke's been pretty lucky that way, otherwise we'd have got flooded out. But there is, you've got the post office in the main street, there's a clerk there, that's where the water come up to. We used to patrol levee banks. Like from there, go into the K-Bar Road, and you'd have a few other people going from there to the Bree. Now, but just the time of levees, keep an eye, don't sort of flood again. The water runs over into town, sort of like into the Bourke.
This is Tracy speaking about her special family.
I moved to Wingania. I lived out there for quite some time. Then when I had the triplets, I moved into Bourke. Close to the hospital, so they had medical needs and that. I didn't think it would runs in the family, but then only last year I found out we have another set of triplets. But it was a shock for me. Yeah, my family come from a big family. And the Australian multiple birth unit, they helped me out. First 6 months, everything was provided for free. Didn't have to buy anything. So that was a big help. And I was thinking it was strange because I was getting morning sickness earlier than what I should have been getting, yeah, and I just noticed the changes and I was thinking something must be up, but when I went to have the ultrasound, yeah, I got the shock of my life. There's one. No, there's two. No, there's three. I couldn't help but cry. And then 7 years after, I went for ultrasound again and got another shock. He said, there's one. No, there's two this time. I said, you're sure only two? He said, yep. So I had twins after the triplets. Two girls had the triplets. They're identical. And then there's a boy, two girls and a boy, but the two girls are identical. With the twins, a boy and a girl, and they're not identical. Triplets are 14 this year, and the twins be 7 this year. They're the youngest. I have 10 all up, and I'm a grandmother of 9. The triplets are born out 26 weeks, preemie. So I went to Sydney to wait until I have them. So I stayed down there until after I had them, I weren't allowed home until the 40 weeks was up. So I had to stay down there for a few months. Then when I had the twins, they were born at 28 weeks. I got flown out from Bourke back to Sydney for them. First time I've ever seen small babies was when I had my own. And then I've experienced a bit of when I had the triplets, because they were in separate rooms. I used to walk from one room to the other. And then this nurse came up to me. She said, you cannot look at other people's children. Just got a bit cranky. I said, what do you mean? I have 3 babies. They're all in separate rooms, yeah. She must have been watching me taking notice. Yeah, no, it was a shock for me how small they was. And then I come home and hit a bit of a bump with the triplets catching whooping cough. And we got the first one, the smallest one, got flown out to Dubbo. Then when we went to Dubbo, the other one stopped breathing and I had to take her to hospital. And I was travelling to Sydney to see the two girls. I had the boy with me and he stopped breathing along the road. So whatever happens to one of the triplets, happens to 3 of them. Whether it's losing a tooth, getting a scratch, it all happens in the same spot.
My name's Robin Fernanda Gillard. I was born in Dubbo. I've basically lived in Bourke my whole life. I recently just come back from boarding school, so now I'm going back to school here with the family and everything. It's good to be home, I guess, but it's also good to have that education. I guess I like being back close to my nan and my mum, because there were times in boarding school where I get really homesick and I'd just have to call up just to hear their voices and all that, just to make me feel good. I hang out with all my cousins and all that. I catch up with everyone. Sometimes it's just me and my sister at home playing cards or something, or me and my little brother kicking the ball around. I love coming home and seeing Nan. Sometimes when Nan doesn't know I'm home, I surprise her. Mm. And then she'll get a bit teary on me. But yeah.
Here are the ladies from Macquarie Bowls Club in Dubbo who just rolled into town for a bowls tournament.
Well, we're here to play pennant. Does it tell you anything? Well, it depends whether you're church there and your pennants or whether you're playing bowls.
Pennants is a competition that we do in each district in New South Wales, and we have 8 people in a team in ladies, two sets of 4, And when you have different divisions, we're in Division 4 and there's four teams in that division. So you play each other team once at home and once away. West Dubbo ones are first, Burke second and we're third. Yeah.
We only just arrived and then we went for a roll up.
We're going to have to work very hard to beat them.
It's a bit slower than ours. Ours is a really fast breed. This one's slower.
Very good. Have to say yes for the win.
Yes. You have to think positive.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Macquarie,
mate. Macquarie.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, because a lot of them get very competitive. Mm.
Yeah.
And We're more social.
We are competitive.
Yeah.
Yeah, but not like some of them.
Come and try a game of bowls.
Thanks for listening to us on Outback Out Loud.
We'll see you in Bourke.
We acknowledge and celebrate the first Australians on whose traditional lands we meet and work, and whose cultures are among the oldest continuing cultures in human history. Please like, subscribe, rate us and write a review. The Outback Out Loud podcast was designed and produced by Signal Creative and is a collaboration between Signal Creative and Outback Arts. You can find Signal Creative at signalcreative.net and Outback Arts at outbackarts.com.au, and you can find both of us on Facebook and Instagram. These episodes are the result of recordings and interviews collected by Signal Creative and community participants. Over 100 recordings were made. Audio production, sound and music design by Emma Hoy. Community liaison, research and editing by Caroline Wallace.